On today's episode of Hoops 360, the 2026 WNBA season is days away. Which teams have championship upside and which teams we have some major question marks about. Plus, Caitlin Clark or Asia Wilson, who is our pick for MVP, some predictions on that, and so much more. Stay right here for more on Hoops 360. What is up, everybody? Welcome into the latest edition of Hoops 360, a very special edition because we're here. We made it. We finally made it to the regular season of the WNBA. The 30th year of the W tips off on Friday. So on today's edition of the show, we're doing a full season preview. We've got a quick rundown of which teams we think have legitimate championship upside, plus some teams that just need to prove to us a little bit more before we can put them into that contender category. Plus, we will give our official predictions for this season. Could Caitlin Clark win MVP over Asia Wilson, who are we picking as Defensive Player of the Year? And finally, we preview the biggest games of the opening weekend of Season 30 of the W. So let's get into it. She is Cassandra Negley. I am Caroline Fenton. Cass, we're here. We did it. We made it.
We're here.
It.
Yeah.
Happy W.
Yeah. Happy W opening week.
So excited. I'm ready for it. It's been a long, long off season. It's been a long college season, a long off season. It seems like we were talking about the CBA like 16 years ago. And here we are.
Yeah.
Like we mentioned, we've got a crazy packed regular season. So I want to get into our championship tiers, or at least our tiers going into the season. Teams that we view as legitimate championship contenders, teams that we feel like are on the brink, and then teams that have some more work to do. I want to couch all of this by saying, these are our thoughts on May 6th. Anything can
change. Please underline that.
May 6th, 2026. Okay? The season has not started yet. This is all based off of...
Timestamp the video.
Please. Like, I'll write it on my forehead. Preseason prediction. Preseason. Okay? And also, thank you. Yep. Also, just because we're putting certain teams in certain tiers or certain players in certain categories, it doesn't mean we hate your favorite team. And it doesn't mean we hate your favorite player. Okay? We love everybody equally around here. Did we get everything? Did we check all of those boxes?
We also hate everyone equally around here.
Exactly. Yep, 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 yep.
It's both.
It's both. We're equal opportunists here on this program. So we love everyone and we also hate everyone. I don't understand what's confusing about that. But with all that being said, if you disagree with us, let us know. Like, we are here for a good and a healthy discussion and debate. Just be nice, okay? Please. That's all we ask. So we'll start with our championship tier. We have four teams, Cass, in the championship tier. And we did this. This is a collaborative effort. We did this together. In no particular order. We have the Indiana Fever, the Vegas Aces, of course, the reigning champions, won three of the last four. Hello. The New York Liberty and the Atlanta Dream. Which of those four teams do you want to start on?
Ooh, well, I first want to say I think this is a pretty standard top four. From what I'm seeing everywhere, this was pretty easy for us. There wasn't a lot of hemming and hawing. It's these four. Let's start, I guess, with the Indiana Fever, because Caitlin Clark is back, is healthy. She's coming off that international competition with Team USA where she won MVP. This is, once again, a finals contending squad. And I think we should all remember, they were very close to upsetting the Aces without Caitlin, with Aaliyah Boston on the bench, even without Kelsey Mitchell, who left that game five. They almost upset the Aces to make the finals. So this is a clear-cut finals contending team. You have Caitlin Clark, Aaliyah Boston, Kelsey Mitchell, Sophie Cunningham, Lexi Hall, on and on and on it goes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and you also add in, I mean, you brought up the injuries. You had, you know, Sydney Colson on the bench, Sophie Cunningham on the bench, Ari McDonald on the bench, all suffered season-ending injuries. Let's also remember they brought in DaWanna Bonner to be that veteran presence in Indiana since it was such a young team. And then the middle of the season, like, though, that's weird situation where Dewana Bonner left Indiana. So they were so shorthanded. This was such a thin squad, yet they were one game away from punching their ticket to the WNBA Finals. So they've re-signed Lexi Hull. They re-signed Kelsey Mitchell. She got that one-year supermax. They re-signed Sophie Cunningham to the one-year deal. Obviously, Aaliyah Boston is going to be back. Caitlin Clark is back and healthy. I think that was the easiest team, along with the Aces, for us to say, like, yes, of course, that team is a championship contender because they were right there when they were kind of like a skeleton crew in the last couple of games of the season.
Yeah, and they've talked a lot this offseason, Caitlin Clark and Stephanie White specifically, about making sure that Caitlin is monitoring reps, that they're using her maybe in slightly different ways. There's been a lot of talk about not having always Caitlin bring the ball up. And I think their draft selection of Raven Johnson is going to help a little bit with that. She's also kind of that defensive presence that they need. This is going to be a team that looks a lot different from the one last year. I do think that the expectations of reaching a finals, they are realistic. They have the team to do it. They're also kind of unreasonable. Looking back over some number one picks the other day for a story that's coming out this week, it's usually your fourth or fifth playing season that you win a finals as a number one overall pick. That's happened 9 times. Caitlin is kind of technically in year two, if you want to say she didn't really play much last year, was in and out of the lineup with those soft tissue injuries. Even if you want to say year three, I mean, that's not 4 or 5, right? So there's so much pressure on this team, but it's also not like them losing the finals is not they missed their one shot.
I mean, let's live in a world where the Fever do find themselves in the finals and they lose in the finals. I would be in the same chair May 6th, 2027, talking about how I think the Indiana Fever are legitimate title contenders. Agreed. They have such a young core. And even though a historical context will tell you, you need to knock on the door of a championship before you finally break through to one, or you need to have more experience, that young core needs to have more experience together, that doesn't mean that the expectations are going anywhere. Like, I have heard championship or bust. And, like, I think that's a little bit ridiculous because bust means, like, you sell everything off, you fire the coach, like, nobody is safe. Like, that is not where the Fever are right now, so I can't say it's championship or bust, but I can say that championship or at least finals is the expectation. Whether that's fair or not, that is the expectation in Indiana, and that is the expectation in Las Vegas as well. Because why wouldn't it be? You've won 3 of the last 4. You have the greatest player on the planet in Asia Wilson that just signed the most lucrative contract in the history of the WNBA. You re-sign a majority of your core, Jackie Young, Chelsea Gray, Jewel Lloyd. And then you bring in Kennedy Carter that should kind of be a spark plug for that scoring as well. I mean, Kes, the Aces feel so well positioned to be right back where they are so used to being, and that is right back in the WNBA Finals.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about the plus. I want to get back to the caveat of this later, but for me, all they really need is Becky Hammon running the show. She showed me last year that her ability to be a motivator, to tinker, to get her players going in different ways, almost unparalleled, like one of the best, I think, in the game right now. That goes a long way. Asia Wilson, Chelsea Gray, Jackie Young. Those are the three. Those are it. You bring them back, you put some pieces around them. I'm not going to vote against them at this point. Are they necessarily my championship pick? I mean, history would show us it's very, very, very hard to go back to back, and it's very, very, very hard to win 3 in a row. And that's across all sports. That's not just the 30 years of the WNBA. So for them, I think also Kennedy Carter, her ability to score the ball. Dana Evans, I have my eye on. She had a good year last year. Maybe she could be kind of like a sixth player. Everything is always well in Vegas. Well, yeah, not all the time, but.
The one thing that I could say that could hold this Aces team back is the same caveat I have for any team and every team, and that's, are they going to be healthy? Because a lot of a path to a championship is sometimes luck, whether that's luck of the draw, whether that's luck of your schedule, whether that's injury luck. Staying healthy or getting injured at the quote-unquote right time. I never want to say there's a right time to get injured, but, you know, staying healthy throughout the long grind of the postseason, like that is I think the one thing that I can point to that I can confidently say can hold this team back. But that's also what I can say about any team across the WNBA. So Vegas, obviously feel great about them. The New York Liberty, I think a team that knows needing to stay healthy is a key to winning a championship all too well. I got bounced in the first round of the postseason last year, but they were without Brianna Stewart for portions of the season. They were without Sabrina Ionescu for portions of the season. Jonquil Jones was banged up at portions of the season. But that's New York's big three, and all three are coming back. No Sandy Brondello. Obviously, they move on from Sandy Brondello after last season. Chris DeMarco comes in for his first year. He comes in with a massive championship pedigree at the NBA level. Early thoughts on the New York Liberty?
They bring everyone back. They should, which was huge. They complement them well. I mean, Leonie Fibish, Nigelina Hamilton will be back in this lineup, Maureen Johannes, a few other players there. I've seen early on kind of a knock on their depth, and I just don't really see that that's going to be the case. I think the one thing that would hold me back right now in the preseason when we're talking about New York is having a first-year, first-time head coach. And now Chris DeMarco has a lot of experience winning with the Golden State Warriors. But it's just different when you're in the head seat, when you're running things, when you're in a new organization. I think how they handled that will go a long way, as we talked about health, and that has already hit. Sabrina Ionescu is going to miss some time with an ankle injury. And it certainly feels like, I think if you're a Liberty fan, like, man, what did that 2024 championship cost us? Because this health issue is continuing.
It's almost like, hey, we'll do anything for a championship. And the basketball gods are like, anything? Okay.
Exactly.
But I mean, again, like we just mentioned it with the Aces, and that's more of like a hypothetical with the Aces, but that's been a reality for the Liberty. They bring in Satu Sabli, though, and it's almost like unfair, like the rich get richer. You already have that big three, that core with Stewie, Sabrina, and Jonquil Jones. You add in Satu Sabli, who can do literally everything. You feel better about that depth with the addition of Satu Sabli, but still, this is a team that needs to stay healthy, and they're already off to a rough start.
One thing to watch out for the Liberty that we saw a little bit in the preseason is if they go with a jumbo lineup, like a jumbo lineup. They have a lot of height. And Caitlin Clark kind of mentioned that when she was checking into her preseason game against the Liberty about just how tall they can be if they put a certain five on the floor.
Also kind of a knock on the Fever is their size. And with their first round pick and Raven Johnson, I don't know what Raven Johnson's height is, but Raven Johnson is not
the biggest.
Yeah, right. She's like 5'6", 5'7". Like she's not the most like biggest imposing defensive presence out there. Although I love Raven Johnson. I have been living for all of her training camp content. She's such a fun personality. I love her. All right. Last team that we have in our championship tier. A team that had sky-high expectations last year, and a team that just got better, at least on paper, and that's the Atlanta Dream. Of course, we know the massive blockbuster trade. Angel Reese goes from Chicago to Atlanta, because this feels like a team that is poised and ready to get back where they were in the postseason. First round exit last year. But I mean, if Atlanta just continues to click and Angel Reese continues to be the defensive presence that she's been the entirety of her career, why not Atlanta?
Yeah, Carl Smesko has talked about her as that final piece, and it'll be how they do all fit together. And I think that's another instance of Carl Smesko was a first-year head coach last year, and they performed really, really well. You know, he talked about giving the ultimate green light to Alicia Gray, who upped her game again. If we're talking about number one picks and when they win titles, Ryan Howard is in her fourth, you know? So you look at things like that kind of, for Dan Padover, the GM there, that kind of annual tinkering it takes. And I think they've continued to do that every offseason. And maybe this is the year that, at the very least, they get to the finals.
Yeah. Do you think that's a fair expectation to get to the finals?
Yeah.
I mean, you have Alicia Gray, who's an MVP finalist last year, Ryan Howard. It wasn't rebuild. It was reload and get that much bigger in Atlanta.
They're also going to have a health injury with Brianna Jones missing time. So that's already going to put them on a back foot.
I want to move on to our middle tier. And this one is tough because I think there's far more variance in this tier than our top and our bottom. I think that it's easy to look at a team and say, okay, that's a championship team. It's easy to look at a team and say, yeah, that team's got some work to do. This middle tier, I think, has some wide variance of this team could be a legitimate championship contender if A, B, C, and D go correctly. Or this team is maybe more of a bottom tier, but maybe did the right moves and did the right things in the offseason to just kind of tip them right over the edge. So our middle tier, we have the LA Sparks, who I think is a very buzzy team going into this season. The Toronto Tempo in their inaugural season. I mean, like, never say never. We saw the Golden State Valkyries do it last year. The Minnesota Lynx, speaking of injuries, Phoenix Mercury, the Washington Mystics, and I just mentioned them, the Golden State Valkyries. I want to start with the LA Sparks. They were banged up a little bit. Obviously, Cameron Brink unavailable for a majority of her career so far, tearing her ACL in her rookie season. But what Kelsey Plum has added to this team, it feels like, Cass, when we talk about those teams that could potentially be bumped up into a championship tier, I'm looking at LA as a potential team that could do that. I just need to see it. I want them to prove it to me before I give them that benefit of the doubt.
I think that's fair. I'm looking at them the same way. Like, I think they're going to be very successful. I made some bold predictions this week and said they would make the finals. Nneka Ogumike joining them is huge. Kind of coming back home. She knows what's up. They've made some other really good offseason moves. I think for them, in terms of, like, you know, you talk about you want to see it and show me you can play any sort of good defense at some point in a game. And also to Cam Brink, don't foul out. Like, that is what was missing. And it's like, yeah, I overuse it, but Kelsey Plum being like, we need to play some effing defense. That's what they had one of the best offenses in the league. And Lynn Roberts has been on some podcasts and at Media Day this week. And it's like, we're not hiding the fact that, like, we want to be champions in LA. This is a market players want to be in. Like, we owe something here. We want to win. Defense was the sore spot. They all know it. They just got to play it.
And the hilarious thing to me is that it was so obvious that how horrific their defense was last year. I think bottom three in the league in literally every single statistical category. I think it was 108 points given up per 100 possessions. And who did they draft with their first draft pick? Taniya Latson, who was the leading scorer in women's college basketball in her second to last season when she was at Florida State. So it's like, as far as you're like, here's what we're really good at and here's what we need help with, we're just going to double down on what we're good at and just get that many more scorers. But to your point, yeah. But if the defense can be just slightly improved, like if the offense can continue scoring at that clip and the defense doesn't have to be top three in the league, if you're just not bottom three, like that is where you can start to see the Sparks finally break through to the postseason for the first time in 5 years.
Yeah, you should not be hanging out with the lottery teams in terms of your defense, especially in this league. I will make a defense of Taniya Latson, though. First of all, I think that's a good pick. The GMs had kind of agreed that was one of the steals of the draft. Like, yeah, great pick by them, which I'm sure you agree with. Comes from Dawn Staley, spends her final season there. So she knows a little bit about defense at this point. Maybe she can carry that over.
I say that not because I dislike the player, just because the irony of it all.
No,
I
it
love
is funny.
Taniya Latson. And I want to say, too, if I don't have it pulled up in front of me, I mean, one of Taniya Latson's last game as a Gamecock, she led the team in rebounds. I'm trying to pull up her box score now. Oh, against UConn, she had 11 rebounds. I was like, what? Where did this come from? A player that was averaging like 2 to 3 rebounds a game, a player whose game was really just shooting. I'm like, well, where did this defense come from? So maybe we're starting to piece some of those things together. But as we advance throughout our middle tier, we have a saying in the college season, and it's in Dawn Staley we trust. We kind of mimic that same saying in the W season, and it is in Sandy Brondello we trust, which is why the Toronto Tempo, even in their first season, they get the Sandy Brondello benefit of the doubt, Cass.
They do. She has never missed a playoffs as a head coach. That includes her time in New York Phoenix and one season as the head of San Antonio way back in like 2010s, I think. So like, I'm going to give it to her. I think they made some good moves. They have Marina Mabry, Brittany Sykes, kind of their backcourt duo. I mean, like, could they, I think this is a great, to your point, like, could they end up at the bottom of the standings by the end of the season? Yes, very much so. But I think with what we know right now, like, I think they could land in that middle tier and maybe even compete for a playoff spot.
I am so looking forward to everything that is kind of like the tempo experiment of this season, like being in the Canadian market, obviously be an expansion team. But I'll go back to what I just said. As long as you have the foundation of one of the most well-respected coaches in women's basketball and Sandy Brondello, like, I'll say, why not? And this is the kind of team, and I'll add Portland into that as well. They're playing with house money this year. They have the buy-in. They have the investment, at least it seems, from the fan base. They have, you know, a solid coaching staff in place. They have a solid enough roster in place. At this point, it's just like, hey, go out there and see what you can do. And if you make the postseason, great. And if you don't, then just keep building on it for the future. I don't think this team has the same, kind of plucky mentality of, we're just going to go out there and give it our all. That's the Minnesota Lynx. Nafisa Collier's availability obviously is a question mark. I think injury and availability might be a theme going into this season. And as we go throughout the course of the season, who can avoid getting bitten by the injury bug the most? The Minnesota Lynx for so long have been in that championship tier. But with the Nafisa Collier question mark, I mean, when you have an MVP caliber player, one of the top players in the league, and, you know, she won't be available at least until when? Like that, I think that rightfully so kind of bumps you down into that second tier.
Yeah, being without your runner-up MVP and losing as much talent as you did, you know, Alana Smith is no longer there. Jessica Shepherd also left. Natisha Heidemann, like last year coming into the season, Cheryl Reeve, and throughout the season, Cheryl Reeve talked a lot about they felt like what was repeatable was their chemistry. And it's actually only been kind of like one off season that they came in as a championship contender, because that 2024 season, we all kind of wrote them off. It didn't look on paper like it made sense. And she wanted to repeat that chemistry, fell short. And so this year it is almost like, well, we got to spark that again. I like Olivia Miles in Minnesota. I think she's going to get a long leash. She's going to have a lot of playing time. We're going to get to awards later when we talk more about her. But for Minnesota, that question mark about Fee is really why they are, you know, if I were like ranking these teams, bottom mid tier.
And I will give the Lynx some credit, at least last year. And as you pointed out, this is not the same team. But last year, I was so impressed with the Lynx's ability to stay the course when Nafisa Collier was not available. She went down with an injury. The Lynx were able to like stay relevant, and the Lynx were able to continue to find ways to win games. And I do think that that is part of a championship formula. Is the injury bug is inevitable, right? You can't control it. It's going to happen to any team at some point. But how can you overcome that, especially when it comes at the hands of a player like Fee? But that's not this team. It's a different team. It's a different core. They lost so many pieces to free agency. So I'm with you. I love Olivia Miles. More of that to come. little tease there for you. But the Lynx just feel like a team that, to me, could go either way. Like, would I be surprised if the Lynx found themselves going deep into the postseason? No. Would I be surprised if the Lynx were like, man, we really just want to flush 2026 down the toilet and look ahead to 2027? Like, I also would not be surprised. Another one of our teams in the middle tier, and their team that we expect to take a step back, is the Mercury. You lose Satu Sabli, I'm sorry. You are worse. You're worse.
Yeah, you didn't replace her, you know, and I think it's one of those, the off season was really tough. It was really condensed. I don't know what the conversations were, but Satu went to New York. It's also a place, you know, Niara Sabali won, her sister won a championship there. And Satu was there throughout the parade. She spent a lot of time in New York. She played with Sabrina in at Oregon. Like, there is a relationship that was clearly building there. As for the mercury of it all, like, Nate Tibbetts is kind of riding this line of, well, consistency. Like, consistency is good for us. And if you look at the mercury last year, they come in with basically an entirely new team. I think they, much like any team that makes the finals, caught some patches of luck along the way. And now it's just a matter of using what you have. I will say I really like that Monique Okoa-Makani is still there in Phoenix. She was a bright spot for them. But to your point, how do you replace that offense?
Yeah. As we go ahead throughout our middle tier, I look at the Washington Mystics. It is Kiki Aryeefin. It is Sonia Citron. And then it's kind of everybody else. I kind of fell in love with this Mystics team last year. Like, we were talking about Sonia Citron as a potential Rookie of the Year candidate at one point in the season last year. I mean, she had a great start. Kiki Aryeefin had a great start. Like, that season was, I think, enough reason to give every Mystics fan everywhere, like, hope of, like, this is our future. This will be our future core. How many steps can they take forward? Another team that I think, like, those two players going into their sophomore season will dictate, okay, is Washington upper middle tier or will Washington miss out in the postseason yet again?
Sorry, I'm just lost looking at their roster trying to find the veteran. I just...
Ear. I can't find it.
Washington has so many players that I like, but it feels like there's, first of all, an absurd front court logjam. They just keep hoarding all of this front court talent, like this young talent. I'm like, what are you doing with all of this? Again, I like so many of these players, but to your point, it'll be interesting to see like how it looks on the floor. And I think for as much as we've talked about having veteran leadership and knowing what it takes and all this kind of stuff, like who is that veteran leader now? I do want to point out one player, Georgia Amor, is healthy after she missed her rookie season with an ACL. So I'm excited to see her and what she can do in the W here.
To your point, I was just looking through the roster. Georgia Amor, rookie. Lauren Betts, rookie. Angela Dugalich, rookie. Kiki Aryeefin, year two. Rory Harmon, rookie. Okay. Just a Gen Z movement in Washington, which, like, experience, I think, is invaluable. So if experience is what they gained this year, but is also maybe their, you know, the crack in the armor for this team, but you're like, hey, we're just getting experience in 2026 and we think we're going to be a contender in 2029. Like, I can see the vision there as long as you have patience with the brass in Washington. Last team that we have in our middle tier is the Golden State Valkyries, and that we did a full breakdown on the Valkyries on last week's edition of the show.
Yeah.
So if you missed that, feel free to go back. You can find it on your preferred podcast platform and on YouTube. The thing with the Valkyries is in year one, like we were talking about the Toronto Tempo and the Portland Fire, you are playing with house money. It's year one. You make the postseason, first expansion team ever to make the postseason in your inaugural year. Like, it's good vibes. You know, it's high expectations. It's excitement. It's business success. It's basketball success. But how do you follow that up in year two when your expectations are so much higher and when there are some very valid and fair question marks about roster construction this past offseason?
Yeah, defensively, they're going to be solid. What they look like on offense will be how their season goes. But this offseason has been baffling for the Valkyries. Ohemo Nyanen met with media again this week and was asked about that trade. Marta Suarez is no longer on the roster. Didn't make a lot of sense, to be honest with you. And there's something going on there. It's odd.
It was odd. It was like, it was a press conference that I was like, I hear what you're saying. I don't understand it. And I don't know how you got there. And I think it is fair to question an organization that didn't show a lot of growing pains in year one. Do we start to see those growing pains potentially come to fruition in year two? I'm not saying I expect it to happen, but I think it's fair questions that have been brought up. You know, Ahmed was talking about the Marta Suarez and Flaje Johnson trade, and then Marta Suarez gets waived, which isn't crazy to see a second round pick get waived after training camp. But also at the same time, it's like you invested who you drafted with your first round pick, the number 8 overall pick for Marta Suarez. So it's just like, and then she referenced the salary cap and the CBA for being some of those reasons. And I just, it's a new CBA. We're all trying to figure it out. It just didn't make a ton of sense to me. So the Golden State Valkyries will be, yet again, for the second year in a row, a fascinating case study. But let's go into the bad teams.
Brutally blunt.
I'm just kidding. Carry like I on. Said, we love all of
send
you
send your
equally.
Mail to Caroline.
Yeah, at me, please. Our bottom tier. And look, these are either teams that, like, there are a couple teams in here that I could totally see making a push for the postseason. But there's also some teams in here that I'm like, look, you got some work to do. The Dallas Wings will be a fascinating team. Well, we have them in our bottom tier. But they are an example of one of those teams that I'm like, I could see it. Like, I could see all of these pieces fitting together. Paige Bueckers coming into year 2. Obviously, you bring in AZ Fudd, Arike Ogunbowale back for another year. You bring in Alana Smith. You bring in Jessica Shepherd, 2 players that have a lot of experience in this league, have a lot of experience playing together in this league. But the question is, how do all of these pieces fit together along with a new head coach in Jose Fernandez?
Yeah, they were kind of a fringe mid-tier team to me. Mm-hmm. I think the question, though, you have a first-time head coach in the W. You have players who don't necessarily have a lot of experience being in that mid to higher tier. Like, there's just so much ground to cover that if we're looking at this from an aspect of you need to show me, like, you need to show me on the court, because for the past however many years, we just haven't seen it in Dallas. And we know that there are changes. We're optimistic about it. You know, I like the whole Paige AZ thing of like, listen, we've won before. That means something. It does. But I want to see it now at a pro level. And the Alana Smith move, I think, was when I decided, like, this is a team that could really make some noise for the first time in a long time.
I can see it. Like, I can see all of those pieces fitting together. It's just right now, today, on May 6th, I think it's just sort of a recency bias thing of like, we think they could be something. We think they could be in a really exciting team. But again, show me. I'm not going to give you the benefit of the doubt. I want to see it out there on the court, which, Cass, we'll see up close and personal. We'll get into that here in just a little bit. As we go throughout the rest of our bottom tier, the Portland Fire are in that bottom tier. Part of that is, look, you're just brand new. And everything is going to be new in a feeling out period with everyone. In your opinion, you know, we put the Toronto Tempo in that second tier, Portland Fire in that third tier. What's the biggest, most glaring difference between those two teams, in your opinion?
Head coaches. I think you give someone like Sandy Brondello the benefit of the doubt. When she was introduced, it very much, the way they were speaking, felt like everyone was on the same established page of what they wanted to do. Alex Sarama is new. And again, you just have to show it. I think that's a franchise that could become something 4, 5, 6 years from now. But the coaching is the difference.
Yeah. I mean, we don't say the Sandy Brondello benefit of the doubt for no reason. And there's been a history of success of that NBA to W pipeline. Obviously, we've seen it with Becky mm-hmm. Hammon with extensive NBA experience. But it's not just that. You know, it has to be the right fit. It has to be the right style of play. It has to be the right person, the right coach in place. So I think that not only is Portland going to be experiencing that, but oh, my God, why is the team escaping me? New York, my goodness. New York is going to be experiencing that same kind of, you know, coaching change. Will there be a lapse, or will it be a, you know, kind of a seamless transition? Time will tell us there. The Connecticut Sun, also in our bottom tier here, Cass. I just, yeah. With Connecticut,
oh,
I just feel so bad for Connecticut Sun fans.
Oh.
For so many reasons.
You know,
you're losing your team. And I am from a city that also lost a team. And I know how it feels. And it stinks. And you haven't seen incredibly competitive basketball, at least over the past couple of years. And then I don't think that you have a whole lot of reason for optimism this year. It's just like, I want to give Sun fans a big old hug.
That's fair. That's fair. They'll get to watch Brittany Griner, though.
Yeah, it's true.
That'll be good. They have some young talent that's coming up. I think there's some quality basketball that could be played in Connecticut. And we kind of saw that at the back end of last year. But it really does feel like for Connecticut, it's the sundown season. I just think there's a lot of...
Pun intended.
Well, that's what they're calling it, isn't it?
Is it? I didn't see that. That's
or cute. Sunset season, sunset sundown. Season. Maybe Kathy called it sundown.
That's so sad.
Yeah. I'll be excited to get games going, though, in Connecticut. Because yeah. I do feel like right now it's just sadness and bad controversy bad. And yeah.
Yeah. Any hoodle. The Chicago Sky is also in our bottom tier. But Cass, what I think we expect the Sky to be versus what the Sky expects to be, which has been made clear by some of the moves that they've made, are maybe two different things. Because I don't think that you sign Natasha Cloud to just be bad. And you bring her in with Skylar Diggins and Courtney Vandersloot coming back off of a torn ACL. Like, I think the Sky, and after waiting Haley Van Lith, they're looking at it like, look, we're not waiting around for Haley Van Lith to get better and to develop. Like, you waive her and you bring in Natasha Cloud, I think, because you want to win games right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and they made some solid offseason moves. I mean, it's kind of easy to dump on Chicago, and I think there are a million reasons why, and I'm sure we'll have another one within the week. But signing Skylar Diggins, who not only is a great all-star guard, but is from nearby, like, those things still matter, I think, a lot, especially in this league, in terms of just kind of like the hometown hero-ness of it. You know, they still have Camila Cardoso there, who they're going to build around, just a big that Tosh can find. It seemed like they wanted an available point guard to take those early duties while Courtney Vandersloot is still working her way back. And when she comes back, maybe move her off a little bit. I think they also had the ability to do it. So at this point, why not? Chicago will be a fascinating team to keep an eye on. Rekia Jackson, they trade for. Azaree Stevens signs there. They have veteran talent. Dejanay Carrington, who's also coming off injury. It's just a matter of how that all looks and if it Chicago's itself.
I don't know how it's going to come to fruition on the court, but I do know those are some fun personalities in Chicago. I do know it's gonna be fun, at least off the court. I don't know how fun it is gonna be on the court. Time will tell. To round out our final team of our bottom tier, a playoff team last year, but a team that's very much so in transition. It's the Seattle Storm. Seattle moves on from Nneka Ogumike, from Gabby Williams, Skylar Diggins, Erica Wheeler, Brittany Sykes, the entire core, all five of their leading scorers from this past season. But they do bring in the number two overall pick in Dominique Belonga. They are... And then Flauje Johnson as well with that weird trade deadline, you know, draft night trade between Flauje Johnson, Marta Suarez, and the Golden State Valkyries. So Seattle, I think it's just you move on from so much production. You're restarting with a new young core. I think that's just kind of what happens is you just get thrown to the bottom of the power rankings because you have so little continuity and so little turnover from the previous season.
You also have a first-year head coach in Sonia Ramon. I think it makes sense that they're down there. Flauje Johnson will probably also get some good playing time, so what she can do there. But again, you have to show us what all these pieces look like because they do have pieces. And Dominique Belonga, still there. Still voted by GMs, I believe, as the best player in 5 years. So
we shall see about that. And that's what a lot of this is so much of it is all, you know, speculation. So much of it is what have you done for me lately? Things can change. Like by the time next week rolls around, things are going to change. But those are our preseason tiers. Now, just to round things up in our championship tier, we have the Fever, Aces, Liberty, and Dream. But Keep an eye on the LA Sparks because they may be able to bump themselves into that championship tier throughout the course of the season. But coming up next, we're going to get into some of our awards predictions in May before the season starts. Everybody calm down. But our awards predictions before we kick off the 30th year in the WNBA coming up next here on Hoops 360. Moving along here in our preseason predictions, we gave you our tiers. Now it is time for our way too early awards predictions. Again, same caveat. This is before the season. It's May 6th. We have every right to change our mind throughout the course of the season and at the end of the season whenever Cass submits her ballot. But this is just some preseason thoughts. Let's start with MVP. We'll kind of walk you through our thought process, some players that we thought about, the, you know, the internal debates that we were having with ourselves and the debates that we were having with each other. And we're going to walk you through the players that we had in contention. We'll start with MVP. And Cass, you can't have an MVP conversation without A.J. Wilson. The four-time WNBA MVP, of course, obviously was in both of our, you know, conversations and our internal debates.
Yeah, of course. She's a four-time winner. She's at the top of her game. She leads a team who was always a championship contender. And I think her leadership last year and turning them around the way she did absolutely puts her in this conversation. I think if you're trying to maybe guess at who is going to be the MVP, like, that's the easy pick.
Yeah.
But I want to say right here, like, this isn't about being easy. It's kind of like taking a mirror ball to the season and being like, who could be MVP? And I think it's boring if we all say, well, A'ja Wilson was the best player last year. And for, you know, the past 5 years, she's been one of the best players. So I'm going to pick her as my MVP. Like, do you guys really want that?
You don't want that. Because if we said that, you call us boring. But I think there's two different things, right? Are you betting on this? Like, are you wagering on this? Are you trying to make money off of this? I am not. No. But, like, if you're listening and you're like, hey, I want to, like, put some money in on a bet going into the WNBA season. I want to put some money on a future. Like, I think A'ja Wilson to win MVP is a wildly safe bet. But we're not safe around here. So, you know, if you might see the graphics circulating around social media, neither of us chose A'ja Wilson as our eventual MVP because of that reason, frankly, because it is a little boring to project A'ja Wilson to win yet her fifth MVP. Would I be surprised? Of course not. But sometimes you got to shake things up. Two MVPs that we also discussed. You threw out Breanna Stewart. I threw out Sabrina Ionescu. The reason why, at least I, did not choose either of those players as my eventual MVP was because since we threw out both of them who play on the same team, I think it makes it that much more difficult for either Stewie or Sabrina to win MVP, especially when you're viewing so many other players across the league that are largely carrying their squads. New York is so stacked and so loaded. It's hard to pinpoint and pick out just one player that's significantly above and beyond all of the rest.
I do think Stewie is going to have a good year. She had a really good offseason. She's coming in healthy. She had those injuries last year that impacted the entire team. Since we're talking about New York, I also want to throw in Jonquil Jones. This is a really forward center-centric award. And I think those two could also be a choice for voters by the end of the year if New York has the success that it does and they stay healthy and both do have their consistently good seasons.
I think that you bring up a great point. MVP is not just about like who's the best player in the league. MVP also has to play for a team that is a legitimate contender. Like, you have to be a great player on a great team. That's why I think Kelsey Plum could also be a fascinating potential candidate for MVP if we believe the Sparks can take that next step forward, if we believe the Sparks can be that potential championship contender that at least it looks like they could be on paper. I think, you know, you grab, obviously, the biggest star on that team and also a player that has done so much for the Sparks, at least last season. I think Kelsey Plum is one of those kind of dark horse under the radar candidates if the Sparks come to fruition.
Yeah, absolutely. Do we want to get into who we both maybe to some controversially picked, though?
Is it controversial?
I don't think it is. Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark.
Like, here's the thing about Caitlin Clark. First of all, I think we're all just completely forgetting, like, she didn't play last year. As you've mentioned already today, like, what have you done for me lately? Recency bias. She had a really good rookie season. They've put even more talent around her to help that. She didn't get to play much last year. Hopefully she comes in completely healthy. She has a great time at Team USA. And the thing about Caitlin is she can pack a stat sheet in a way that guards typically haven't. And I think she could become the rare guard to do that.
I think too, look, when we believe the Fever are going to be a great team.
Right.
I think the Fever are going to be a great team in large part because of Caitlin Clark's contributions. Let's not ignore the fact that in her rookie year, she was what, fourth in MVP voting? Top five in MVP voting in her rookie season. Let's not forget that she was FIBA MVP. Let's not forget that it's also Caitlin Clark. These are humans that vote on these awards. It's not robots. It's not, you know, Martians that have never watched the WNBA before. There is an inherent amount of bias that exists inherently with human voters. And that's not a call out to voters. That's not a knock on voters. That is just something that I think we all have to acknowledge. Would never knock you, Cass. But I also think there is a factor of, I don't, this is unfair. I don't, this is a slight to Caitlin Clark. At least I don't mean it to be. There is a certain weight that being Caitlin Clark carries.
Yeah. I don't want to move off Caitlin Clark, but I do want to throw in here, because we said that Indiana would be really good, I think Aaliyah Boston could enter this conversation as well. She fits the forward mold. She's going to see a lot of potential baskets because of attention paid to everyone else. So that's another pick. But in terms of Caitlin Clark being Caitlin Clark, in all honesty, like, isn't that kind of the same as Asia Wilson? Like, she's won so many times now that it's just, well, Asia Wilson is Asia Wilson, and it was Stewie before her. Stewie is Stewie, right? Like, these kinds of players end up on ballots like this because you expect them to be good. And as long as they have good seasons, like, well, they're one of the best players in the league. Like, that's how it works.
That's how it works. And preseason odds have, and I know Vegas isn't everything, but at least Vegas is something and kind of gives us a barometer for the general public and for the very smart people in Vegas who make these predictions. I mean, Caitlin Clark is the second, has the second best odds just behind Asia Wilson. Asia Wilson at plus 225, Caitlin Clark at plus 245. Like, that, it is right up there. So all of the rebuttal and pushback that we might get from people of saying, why are you picking Caitlin Clark? Well, not the only people picking Caitlin Clark to win MVP. Rookie of the Year, I think, is another fascinating, you know, discussion as well. And I think right now where it stands, it feels like it could be between AZ Fudd and Olivia Miles. Cass, you and I both picked Olivia Miles to win Rookie of the Year. What was your thought process there?
Before I get into my thought process, when you and I had spoken earlier in the week, and we filed our picks last week, actually, we kind of talked about how we both separately picked Olivia Miles, and we were a little surprised by that. General managers also picked Sabrina or Olivia Miles in their survey this week, which I thought was interesting. I picked Olivia because I think she's going to see more usage in Minnesota. She's just going to have more playing time. She's, again, a stat-stuffing type threat. And at the end of the day, the numbers matter a lot. And we don't always look at them in terms of minutes played or what have you. Like, it's typically per game. And I think she's going to look really good in that avenue. I also think she's in a great position where she's going to have Lindsay Whalen there, the four-time championship point guard with the Lynx, to kind of guide her through this rookie season. I think she'll have a great year. Oh, also, I mean, AZ is in this camp too, but like, Olivia Miles stayed an extra year in college to kind of prepare for the pros. And again, they both have that going their way, but I just think Olivia Miles is in a better situation.
And I think important to point out too, one reason why AZ stayed an extra year is because she was hurt. So it was almost like 5 years to play four. Still great experience, and still experience that both of them have gotten not only on the court, but just in being the focal points and being, you know, big time names, being the faces of their respective franchises, you know, Olivia Miles at Notre Dame and TCU and then AZ Fudd at UConn. They have that experience of feeling all of the pressure that they are inevitably going to feel at the WNBA level. Coach of the year.
So was Liv. Liv was injured too.
Oh, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right.
I just didn't want to let you yeah, go by that without.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for pointing that out. I totally forgot about that. Coach of the year. I went Jose Fernandez, the coach of the Dallas Wings. You went Lynn Roberts, coach of the LA Sparks. Some other names that we threw out there as well. Carl Smesko, Sandy Brondello, now in Toronto. Becky Hammon, obviously. She's always going to be in the conversation. Is one of the best coaches in the W because she is one of the best coaches in the W. Stephanie White with the Indiana Fever. Because I ultimately landed on Jose Fernandez because I think that coach of the year is one of those awards that can be interpreted in different ways. Mm-hmm. Is it coach of the best team? Is it coach that's been responsible for a really big turnaround? All are valid. I do expect the Dallas Wings to take a massive step forward. Paige Becker is in year two. AZ Fudd fitting into that mix. You have a lot of veteran players that are coming in. I don't view the Dallas Wings as a championship contender, but I do view the Dallas Wings as a contender to be one of those teams to make a really big leap. So that's why I kind of singled out Jose Fernandez.
Yeah, we looked at it the same way. Like, we both looked at it as a coach who is going to take their team on a significant jump, which is why I went Lynn Roberts. If it goes to a coach of a team who finishes in the top, well, we know who those coaches probably are.
Yeah, yeah. The Steph Whites, the Becky Hammonds of the world. Defensive player of the year. I think this was the hardest one for me to kind of zero in on. I went back and forth. Of course, you can't talk about MVP or Defensive Player of the Year without talking about Asia Wilson, having her in the conversation. I ultimately landed on Angel Reese. I think Defensive Player of the Year, like MVP, you have to be on a good team. You have to be on a contending team. I believe the Atlanta Dream are going to be that. So I ultimately landed on Angel. I mean, she's good for a double-double on literally any given night. Who was your pick for Defensive Player of the Year?
I went with Gabby Williams with the Valkyries.
Good. Yeah.
Incredible defensive perimeter player, known as one of the best, joins a team that is very defensive minded, going to be probably one of the best defenses in the league. So that was kind of my preseason pick. I think Alana Smith, the co-winner last year, is a good option. You look at someone like Aaliyah Boston, who won this add-on rival, the Defensive Player of the Year, and Gabby Williams is a three-time EuroLeague Defensive Player of the Year as well. So these are all established names.
Yeah, and all, I think, don't want to say safe bets, but all, I think, fair, you know, players and fair names to have into the conversation. Sixth Woman of the Year is a tough one. Because you don't always know how a lineup is going to shake out and who exactly is going to be coming off the bench. I think Sixth Woman of the Year and the Most Improved Player are two really difficult awards to project. I ultimately went with Cameron Brink. You know, she's finally healthy. She has a little bit of experience under her belt, assuming that she does come off the bench in LA and assuming that LA will make those progressions this season. She's ultimately who I landed on. But you went Vinaya Lady Hamilton, correct?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
Former starter, right, on a championship team throughout the year. She's going to be coming off the bench. I know she's coming off injury and maybe that impacts a little, but I felt like that was a pretty safe pick of the ones that we know. As you said, this is very tough in the preseason when you're not sure. Also, this is one that can change dramatically, I think, as it goes along. This is one that actually has a threshold, like a requirement to win this award. You have to come off the bench more times than you play, and that can really change throughout the season.
Yeah, no doubt. I think Sophie Cunningham or Lexi Hull are names to watch in that as well. But again, tough to predict when you don't know who the starting five rotation is going to be. Those are official picks. Let us know your thoughts. Who did we miss? What do you disagree with? Again, this is May 6th. Things will change, but these are just our early season impressions and just some names to keep an eye on. If you are new to the women's game, welcome. Like, these are just some names and some teams to keep an eye on, at least based off of season expectations. The season gets underway this weekend. Friday is the season tip-off. Toronto Tempo will also have their premiere, their debut as a franchise in the WNBA. They take on the Mystics at 7:30 Eastern time at home on Friday. But the real games, the great matchups, the juicy matchups get started on Saturday. Cass, you will be in Indiana this weekend as the Wings and the Fever face off, the last four first overall picks going head to head. Aaliyah Boston and Caitlin Clark, Paige Beckers and AZ Fudd. What are you looking for in this one?
The top four picks. I mean, it's actually pretty rare to see the last four number one picks go at each other in a single game. We've had opportunities 4 times throughout the league's history, but it's only happened once because at least one of those players has been injured. That was 2018. It was 2 for Vegas and 2 for Seattle. You had Brianna Stewart and Jewel Lloyd. And then for Las Vegas, you had Asia and Kelsey Plum before they got Jackie. And of course, that was kind of as Las Vegas was building their dynasty. The Storm were winning. They went on to win that year. So this is really, I think, going to be the first of many really, really, really good games over the next couple of years for the Wings and the Fever.
I expect that place to be popping. It's going to be packed. It's going to be
always wild.
Loud. It's always wild, but like first game of the year, Caitlin Clark is back off of injury. Paige and Azy are in town. It's like a who's who in women's basketball. So I'm pumped for that one. Later that afternoon, we'll also have a finals rematch, Mercury and Aces. When the schedule first came out, I circled that one as like, ooh, like this is going to be a great one. Mercury just don't really look like the same team. It's lost a little bit of its luster, but always great to see the reigning champions and Asia Wilson out there on the court. But another game that I'm really circling is that next day, Aces Sparks in LA. I think this is going to be a great test for an LA team that we have some questions about, but have high expectations for. And
yeah,
Kelsey
Plum
versus the Aces is always good.
Yeah. On opening weekend, let's go.
Let's go. We are here. We made it. We've got so many games this weekend. So we'll be back next week to react to all of the biggest action, some of our biggest takeaways as the 30th anniversary of the WNBA gets underway. If you have a thought, want to add new perspective, have questions, we are always here for you. If you're watching on YouTube, feel free to leave a comment down below, but you're always welcome to listen to the pod on your preferred podcast platform. She's Cassandra Negley. Check out her wonderful work. She'll be in Indiana, like I mentioned. Fever, Wings. You can find all of her breakdown analysis on that game on sports.yahoo.com. And you can find us next week on Hoops 360.